Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on The Charlie Kirk Show, we have an exclusive interview with former Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker and his thoughts on impeachment, the FISA scandal, and will any of these people actually been held accountable? It's the end of the year, and it's the season of generosity and giving. So I have a great conversation with my friend Bill Pulte, who has started Team Giving, which has directed millions and millions of dollars to help people in need. You guys are not going to want to miss these exclusive interviews here on The Charlie Kirk Show. Make sure you are subscribed. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Press that subscribe button. Take out your phone. Do it right now. Leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review. And of course, email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com for your questions. We'll be doing an Ask Me Anything very soon. Buckle up, everybody. We got a great show coming. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
We are here at the Charlie Kirk Show from our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit with former Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker. Matt, it's great to have you here.
Good to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, of course. You're an American patriot, and you've been very busy on cable television.
I have. And, you know, I always remember, whenever I see you on there, I always send you a text because I'm like, hey, it's so good to see you out there fighting.
Thank you.
It feels like there's so few voices that are speaking truth, and you're one of them. And so, you know, it's an honor to be here at the Student Action Summit, and it's an honor to be on your show.
So, well, thank you. So there's been a lot in the news lately, and you've been a very clear voice on it. First, let's start on impeachment. Just from the legal case, someone who obviously your whole background comes from, you know, the rule of law and adhering to the United States Constitution. What's your interpretation of what this president has to go through, especially how the Democrats have been pushing this forward?
Yeah, I've been pretty outspoken on this. And if you remember probably a month or so ago, I woke up to, I don't know if you did, but someone texted me and said, you're trending on Twitter. And I thought,
it's okay. We've done that together.
I know. And I was like, what happened? Because I didn't think I'd done or said anything. It was just a normal whatever day of the week it was. And it arose out of, the left was apoplectic because I made the statement that that abuse of power is not a crime. And somehow that was controversial, which, you know, what I meant and what I continue to say and what now everyone's saying is that the idea of abuse of power as a crime, there's no elements. There's no way, you know, I'm a former prosecutor. I was a U.S. attorney in Des Moines, Iowa. And what I know is that you take the law, which is the crime, and you have elements to that crime, and then you have facts that you line up and prove those facts to those elements.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that. This abuse of power has always been whatever Congress says it is, whatever a majority in Congress says it is. And that's dangerous because—
So you're saying there's no U.S. criminal code of abuse of power.
Well, there's no U.S. criminal code, but more importantly, there's no common law of abuse. Mm-hmm. There's just, it's again, it's just a grab bag that you can throw whatever you want. And we saw that. You saw that in throughout the course of this impeachment process. I said the other day, well, I kind of took what Senator John Kennedy said, which is, he's like, this is a circus without a tent. And I added to that, I said, you know, John Kennedy said it's a circus without a tent, but it's a circus without a tent, but there's plenty of clowns.
He's got the best one.
Oh, yeah, I love Senator Kennedy. He does say the funniest things. But it's been difficult to watch. I mean, knowing the president as closely as I know him and how much I admire him and want him to be successful, this is unfair. I think that this is his the process has been unfair. The House ran a completely – it was railroaded. If we did this in our court system, you know, prosecutors would be thrown out mm-hmm. and disbarred because it is so unfair that they stack the deck and the rules against Republicans and against the president. And now, you know, they're playing this game where they're holding the impeachment articles and not transmitting them to the Senate.
Yeah, what is that? Talk to us about that.
I don't know. I keep watching this, trying to figure out what the plan is.
Is he not officially impeached until they send the articles over?
I saw a very smart Andrew McCarthy was on TV today talking about that and how
I don't know either way.
Yeah, the Constitution's very vague. You know, it's the impeachment happens in the House, bribery, treason, other high crimes and misdemeanors. And then the trial happens in the Senate, but there's, you know, the minutia of how those are passed across and the like, nobody seems to know. You know, and then we go back into the Federalist Papers and you know, kind of all this tradition, and everybody, especially on the left, points out some vague statement that Alexander Hamilton made in, you know, 1793 and say, this is exactly what it should be.
But you know what I love about that is the left hates our history. They hate our Constitution. I could say this. You can smile.
I said it on the stage.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, no. And all of a sudden they love it. Like, oh, yeah, we're big constitutionals. No, you're not. Your whole shtick is that our Constitution needs to be shredded. Our founding fathers were these racist, horrible people.
Too, yeah. Right?
But now all of a sudden they're textualists. Now all of a sudden they're big Hamilton people.
Right. No, it's been extraordinary.
Go look at what Hamilton thought on immigration, by the way. He was a immigration restrictionist. I'm sure they'd love that too.
Yeah, no, I mean, and this is the thing is they, you know, they quote these, you know, Madison, Hamilton,
who we love. I mean, they were
who we
brilliant.
Love, and again, they were brilliant, and they were the reason, and what set forth this great American experiment. And the problem we have now, and it's, you know, again, I know that history repeats itself, and I know that now that we have the idea and the concept of a purely partisan impeachment of a president of the opposition party, we're going to see that from now on. If just impeachment and not transmitting and having a trial is
so
the
bizarre.
New standard, then guess what? That'll happen when the shoe's on the other
but
foot.
You know what this feels like, and you have familiarity with this, and some of our listeners don't, but we're going to we'll talk about it. A lot of the banana republics in Central America and South America, they're impeaching presidents all the time. And part of the framework there is the opposition party will use whatever instrument of government they have to go after the opposition party.
Right.
And no respect for the other side, no regard for the commonwealth of the country. I mean, Paraguay, Bolivia, they're always impeaching some president at some point. The weaponization of the, you know, any sort of the mechanisms of government.
Right. No, and what you see in other countries is the idea of a no confidence vote in parliaments. I think that's as close as we've got. But is it any surprise that the Democrats in the House don't respect, like, have confidence in Donald Trump? I mean, it's like they've hated him.
Well, that's exactly
from the
right.
moment that he appeared.
Impeachment
on the
is
stage.
Not a no confidence vote.
Right.
Well, and we talked about this in a previous episode of our show where Pelosi's acting as if he's prime minister, not president.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different constitutional system. A presidential republic has tension between the executive and congressional branch, co-equal branches.
Yeah, yeah, and I experienced that when I went up and did my hearing in February.
You were excellent, by the way, when you gave some shade to Jerry Nadler.
I was just trying to survive.
Mr. Chairman,
I was just trying to survive
your
that
5 minutes
day.
Are
yeah.
up.
And they were. His 5 minutes were up, and I thought, we're going to be here all day if he's just keeps
I'm
talking.
Impressed. I don't know. You could see the time, too. I think they. I thought that only they could see
no,
the time.
No, there was a clock in front of me, and it was It was a little bit like a game that you're ahead in, and you're just trying to, you know, those seconds are ticking
That's
away
right.
slowly.
You'd run the ball.
Right.
Run
no,
the
we
ball.
We were running up the middle all day that day. But in all seriousness, I think the president has been subjected to really a ridiculous set of circumstances where the instruments of government, whether it's the Mueller investigation and how that started and what the origins are and all that. And for
yeah,
2 years.
I want to get into that in a second.
For 2 years he was hamstrung by that. And again, I inherited the investigation after Sessions left and you know, I obviously wasn't recused. And so I supervised that. But, you know, by the time I took over, it was over. The investigation was over. You know, there was no collusion, no obstruction. And then really, like literally, Mueller testifies the day before this alleged call. And I think the key fact that has to be repeated over and over is that Nancy Pelosi essentially said, we are going to do an impeachment process, an impeachment inquiry, before they had seen the transcript. And that's how, you know, she got out in front of her skis, which politicians should not do, is because as soon as they do, then the facts develop. We had the transcript, and there's no there. There's just there was whatever they alleged happened. Just it didn't.
They never thought he would release the transcript. They never thought that. They thought the whistleblower complaint and kind of tangential testimony would be enough. And then transcript actually shows nothing that they said that happened actually happened. And they still impeach him anyway.
Yeah, without the whistleblower, without key witnesses with actually firsthand knowledge of what happened. And you know, this is – you talk about the co-equal branches, and it needs to be reminded that sort of this idea that if the president doesn't turn over every witness and every document immediately upon request from the House – that they will be impeached for obstruction of Congress before – you know, the whole idea is accommodation. The whole idea is the two branches are supposed to work it out and give and take. And instead – and if they disagree, then they go to the courts. And that whole process was short-circuited. And I just think – you know, I think this history – I believe it. I feel it in my soul. I think when we look back in another 20, 25 years and history is, you know, kind of a little – it's a little dimmer and we don't have the sort of the excitement and the partisanship, it's going to shine a very negative light on Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats.
Yeah.
And they're going to pay a political price, but I think they're going to pay a historical price as well.
So we all know how a VPN protects your privacy and security online. But I didn't know this until recently, and it's taking – my internet work that I do and the limited TV watching I do, because at ExpressVPN, they've taught me about this. I don't really watch much TV, but the people who watch TV, they use ExpressVPN. And I use ExpressVPN all the time as well when I surf and I do anything with technology. I've been told it's good with anime. And more importantly, if you're trying to do something productive in this world, your job, family, church, community, and you want to protect your privacy – because you don't want the Chinese government to read your emails, you guys need ExpressVPN. No matter what you do, you guys need ExpressVPN. I put my full name behind it. I use it on my devices. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. That's ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. You can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show and watch what you want, work how you want, and protect yourself at ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. I want to shift gears in the time we have remaining on a couple questions I have specifically about Durham and what he's doing. As much as you can talk about it, you know, obviously with, you know, confidential knowledge, you
I
might
can talk about it all I want.
Okay, great. I just don't want you to, you know, I don't want to breach any topics you can't. I've now heard that Durham is looking into the phone records between Clapper and Comey. There were a couple news articles about that came out. What do you make of that? What do you make of the IG report, which I found to be lackluster, considering what we know to be true about the origins, and what's your take on all that?
Well, how much time we got? Because I got a lot to talk about on this. Let's start with Durham. You know, I worked with John Durham on another confidential classified investigation when I was chief of staff, and I found him to be a real professional, dogged prosecutor and investigator, and willing to marshal whatever resources he needed to.
Everyone speaks very highly of him.
I think. As he's looking at, because what I think their working premise is that the CIA and other intelligence communities used foreign intelligence services to essentially cause all the noise that suggested that there was collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government.
I'm only 26 years old, but if you read Papadopoulos's book, he's not that interesting. He had to be set up. I mean, there's no way this guy keeps running into these guys like he's James Bond.
Right.
He's offered cash. He's this. I mean, I like him. He's a nice guy. But there's no way that there was not some sort of either CIA or NATO intelligence service collusion going behind that.
NATO intelligence service.
Well, meaning the NATO families of countries.
European,
is what I mean.
Right.
That's what I meant to say.
I know what you mean. Me worried there. I thought you knew something I didn't know. It's like NATO intelligence.
Well, maybe there is. I don't know. No, but meaning the countries that are part of the family
of
NATO.
Yeah. So there's the Five Eyes, which are the English-speaking countries, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and England. And the United States are the Five Eyes, and they work very closely on intelligence front, and that's what you know. So that's why they're going to Australia and why they're going to England, because clearly something was happening. And I think you know Durham's going to get to the bottom of it. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, this concept that they ultimately had an investigation whose target was the President of the United States. It just is based on George Papadopoulos, you know, in a bar in London. It's just is insane to me. So I think
he's the key to all of it.
Yeah, no, he is. And I think you know, then once and they ran out. I mean, they figured out that he wasn't sort of the mastermind on this, and then they kind of pivot to Carter Page, and they realize that not only
but he was a CIA asset, though. That's what I can't understand.
I know,
and the Bureau knows that, don't they?
They know it now. I mean, I think they.
I mean, they have to know.
It's hard. You know, there's a lot of assets, and it's hard to keep track of all of them and whose assets they are, and deconflict that whole thing. But that's in the weeds of intelligence. And if any of your listeners are interested, you know, a life in foreign service or in the intelligence communities is a very interesting life. I mean, sure. There are people that literally go, you know, deep into organizations and into governments and all that kind of stuff that would be very dangerous, very interesting work, you know, but it is certainly a career path that I would encourage them if that's what they are interested
in. But I just find it amazing, though, and maybe this is my naivete, that someone who would be a asset of the United States government, who's helping the United States government yeah. collect information for the benefit of our nation, could simultaneously be used as a pawn mm-hmm. by the Bureau. I just find that right. to be very contradictory.
It is.
Okay.
There needs to be an explanation, and that's what I hope and think Durham's going to be mm-hmm. talking about. On the IG report, you know, fundamentally, you boil it all down, is they should not have obtained a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant against Carter Page. They didn't have enough evidence. And, the question that Horowitz, who I worked with and know well, couldn't answer is why. And the only why is that they were desperate to spy on Carter Page and therefore spy mm-hmm. on the Trump campaign. I mean that's they had concluded that Carter Page was the linchpin. He was the mm-hmm. guy that was
the liaison.
Yeah, the liaison, exactly. And so, you know, the other interesting thing is you know, if you look at, so you can get a warrant, and they got a warrant based primarily on, you know, the dossier, the Steele dossier,
which has been debunked.
But when you go back to the court to renew that for another 90 days, you have to demonstrate new
evidence.
And so that's when they started kind of really making mistakes. But the thing that that the FISA warrant shows is that they weren't getting anything. So they listened for 90 days and didn't get anything. Listen another 90 days and didn't get anything. Listen another 90 days and didn't get anything. At some point in time, you know, they should have told the court.
How long was the duration of the spying on?
I think it was about 270, almost a full year. It was four 90-day
really? FISA. And this was 16 to 17,
That's why,
right?
Rod Rosenstein, who was the Deputy Attorney General, while I was at DOJ, he signed the fourth one, and he got there in May of 17, maybe.
So this
April,
was going. Yeah. I didn't realize this was ongoing post Comey's firing.
Oh yeah.
The continual spying on Carter Page.
This is where the key guy in this whole thing is Andy McCabe. He's the one that ultimately, when Comey was fired, decided to make the president a target of this investigation.
I didn't know Rosenstein authorized the final one.
Yeah, he signed the fourth FISA. And the guy that was the DAG before that was, Sally Yates, I think, signed the first one. And then a guy named, I can't even remember his name now. He was the U.S. attorney in Eastern District of Virginia and then was the acting attorney general and had a key role in this whole thing, too.
Wow.
He's now the general counsel at the FBI. Of all things, it's
very incestuous.
You know, there is a small cabal in Washington D.C. that are involved in a lot of these things.
And, jeez,
yeah. No, I mean, and this is why I talked a lot today about this idea of we the people, and the greatness of America is not our government. The greatness of America is its people. Mm-hmm. And you know, we deserve transparency and accountability. And when we don't get transparency and accountability, I think that's when these career bureaucrats, some would call some of them deep staters, whatever you want to characterize them as, that's where they kind of go rogue, is when they don't have sunlight and they don't have, kind of accountability. And, you know, Congress tries to do the best they can with oversight, but they don't, you know, when you don't know the question to ask and you don't know where to look, it's hard to sort of conduct oversight.
Sure.
Because these people aren't going to just come to you and say, oh, this is what we're doing.
So in closing, last question, your anticipation will be that there will be some justice that will hopefully be upheld in this via Durham. Because I can tell you, I'm pretty in tune with the grassroots. There is monumental anger when they start to see people like Flynn, when they see people like Stone tied up in the courts and their lives ruined mm-hmm. for a micron of a micron. Not saying they did nothing wrong, but a micron of a micron of what the other side has done, especially with Flynn, who our own bureau invaded the White House and entrapped him. And Comey brags about it. Comey brags about on tape, and I'm sure you've seen it. Oh, yeah, usual White House is you have to go through General Counsel, White House Counsel. We just walked right in. It was a new White House. We thought it was like an invasion. Like, oh yeah, we're going to get them while they're weak.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's another example of where this whole thing has not been fair. And,
it's,
you know,
outrageous.
General Flynn, I mean, you know, it is, you know, fundamentally the Flynn case, you know, turns on just a couple key facts. And, you know, but the same players are involved there.
It's McCabe who did the 302, right?
It's Strzok. It's all those.
Wasn't it Strzok and McCabe that went into the White House?
Yeah, I believe so. But, it's not something. So Flynn was done and pretty quiet while I was there. And then it's sort of
But it was
taken
really
back
early
off.
In the term.
It was very – no, it was like in January.
Yeah, when they came
January
in.
17,
and they said, oh, we want to clear something up on your form about your lobbying for some government or something, right?
Right.
And usually – I mean – usually just go through White House counsel and then, you know, you don't actually walk in and sit down with the principal. But anyway, Matt, this is great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anything else you want to plug? A book, appearances, any way people can support
you? I don't have a
book
to plug yet, but we'll come back someday and talk about that.
Great.
But, you know, long story short is, you know, I just ask people to join us in this battle for the heart and soul of our country.
Thank
you. And, you know, if people don't stand up and be accounted for and agree to participate – whether it's in a political process, whether it's in these kind of key government roles, mm-hmm. whatever your ability to serve or participate is, you know, we have to. Otherwise, you know, the left is more motivated than they've ever been, and they're they want to win, and we need to want to win more.
Yeah, great, thank you, Matt.
Good.
Really
Thanks,
appreciate
Charlie.
It. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
That was a great conversation with former Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker, and now here's my conversation with the head of Team Giving. Someone who's a good friend, and he's doing a great job for many people in need and having a big impact on our country and in the world. Bill Pulte has started an online movement to get people to help people through online philanthropy. And this Christmas season, I thought it was very fitting to share this conversation I had with him with you. Enjoy. All right, everybody. Super excited to have with me a good friend, American patriot, entrepreneur, and someone who is changing the game the way that we interact with each other and help each other, Bill Pulte. You might have seen him on Twitter or on social media. I've known Bill for a couple of years now. He's been very helpful to us at Turning Point USA, and he's been a great patriot. Bill, thanks so much for coming on the Charlie Kirk Show. I'm so thrilled to be able to talk to you.
My pleasure. Always good to talk with you, Charlie.
Awesome. So talk to, just for our listeners, Bill, just tell us a little bit first and foremost about your story. You've built businesses, you've sold businesses, you're an entrepreneur at heart. Just tell us, introduce yourself to our audience so that we, they have a better understanding of your pretty remarkable journey.
Well, a lot of people have pretty much seen me on Twitter as the guy giving away money. And, that's been their interaction with me. But over the last 10 years or so, Charlie, I've spent my time working in the free market, working out there trying to make money, making money. And now that I have the fortune of, having quite a bit of net worth, I've decided to go about giving it back to people. And so what we've done with Twitter Philanthropy, which is the movement that we've started, is really connecting Americans with each other to take care of each other. And Charlie, I know you're big on this, but, not waiting for a big government to come and try to help somebody, right? And trying to use the resources of individual people and the free market to help each other. So, Charlie, it's really a peer-to-peer network that we've created, and people are taking care of each other all across the country.
Well, Bill, I have to just add, and it's so awesome, and I want to dive into that. You know, at Turning Point USA, we talk about how America is the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. We're the most generous and the most benevolent country. That's always what I start with. You know, Americans gave away over $550 billion to charity last year. And so, Bill, what you've done, which is so remarkable, you've helped give away a significant amount of money online and really have done a great job of helping people directly. But when I talk to people, and the reason they like you and they like what you're doing is they feel as if they give money to a huge, massive international charity, they don't know if it's actually going to help people. So talk about how you're able to cut through the bureaucracy and actually get to helping people directly.
Yeah, well, we're cutting out the middleman, which in many ways is a, capitalistic idea in the sense that, we try to remove any inefficiencies. So to your point, we're getting rid of the big galas. We're getting rid of the big charity balls, where there's all this overhead and just saying, hey, mm-hmm. how about we link people with one another? I mean, it's almost like, and I hate to say it, but I also love to say it, is it's almost like Bitcoin and some of these cryptocurrencies. You have this big financial industry, right, where these banks basically control all currency. And, you know, we're doing something that's analogous to that, where basically we're taking out the middleman in this analogy, you know, the banks and all these other things. But for our purposes, these big charities, these bloated overheads, all the things that we know, you know, when we go to donate to charity, that sometimes it doesn't end up to people. We're ripping that all out, Charlie, and we're putting up causes with somebody, for example, who needs new teeth. And if they haven't had teeth in decades, we're able to put them up on Twitter in one tweet and raise them the money to get new teeth.
Well, so, and I want to just explain to our audience, I'm looking at your Twitter account right now, at Pulte, P-U-L-T-E, and I see your second tweet is exactly that. So this woman's name is Marie. She has no teeth. She requires surgery to receive two implants. And so in Europe, for example, where they have big government socialism, she would just go to the government, taxpayers would pay way too much money, and she might not even get treatment at all, to be perfectly honest. She might be put in a waiting line, and she might not get treatment. What I love, Bill, about what you've done here is that this is people helping people. It is an empathetic connection. And so to just give a little bit more background, and, you know, Bill, you're very humble, and I love that about you, but you started this effort. You had maybe 40,000, 50,000 followers on Twitter.
30,000 and change, Now you're 60,000 people on Twitter,
And it's a very engaged account.
Being recognized everywhere, and people are, you know, saying, "Hey, are you the philanthropist? Are you the philanthropist?" So it's starting to give a good name for philanthropy, and not that it didn't have a good name, right? But we're trying to make philanthropy mainstream. So everybody listening to this podcast, no matter whether you have $1, no matter if you have $0, you can give love and kindness. And I think everybody listening to your podcast, and you know from being in politics, you know, this world is filled with such hate, such vitriol out there. It's about time we start using social media for good. And, you know, I think that's why it's been so popular, Charlie. I mean, really gone from, I don't know, 34,000 followers to 960,000 followers and climbing.
It's amazing. And so I've seen this grow firsthand. And, you know, all the listeners of the Charlie Kirk Show, you know that, you know, we love the free market. And this is only possible because Bill was able to create wealth to be then able to give away wealth. And what's really interesting, I've seen this grow because people feel a personal connection to this. And so, Bill, talk about the launch of Team Giving. What is Team Giving, and what exactly is it trying to accomplish?
So Team Giving is essentially an ability for you as a person to be able to give to somebody specific that's in need. So, for example, if somebody is dying of leukemia, you can go on to teamgiving.com, see their story, and if it resonates with you, contribute. Now, you might say, well, what's the difference between that and GoFundMe? What's different is that the team at Team Giving, of which I'm not an employer or director of, but there's a team over at teamgiving.com, and they're going through vetting these people, researching it, and in many cases, they give me the confidence. Everybody should do their own research, but they give people the confidence that, you know, these people are really dying of cancer and that they really need help. And what's so amazing about it, Charlie, teamgiving.com, is that it finally allows people to see where their money is going, right? Because many times in charities, right, if you donate, let's say you donate $100 to a charity, right, Red Cross, for example, and you may donate it to a hurricane, do you know which person you're giving that to? In most cases, no. And so what I think is so unique about Team Giving is it's literally, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people coming together and taking care of citizens that are dying or in immediate crisis that otherwise wouldn't have anybody taken care of.
It's the final week of the regular season, and there's some bowl games popping up, and there's so much action. The Ducks of Oregon, go Ducks. They are going to beat the Badgers of Wisconsin on New Year's Day, Rose Bowl, and you guys should go participate. Get in on the action. That's what we do at betonline.ag. Great partners. Go to betonline.ag, and don't forget that promo code podcast1. Again, go to betonline.ag, and don't forget that promo code podcast1. Go Ducks. They play on New Year's Day. Get in on the action. Betonline.ag. Use that promo code podcast1. Merry Christmas. Some people I see on Twitter, Bill, say that they only have $5 or $10 to give. Can they also be philanthropists? Are you trying to redefine the term philanthropy for all people, not just people that have had, you know, certain levels of success?
I am. I'm trying to basically neuter this word of philanthropy, which has always been associated with, you know, the richest of the richest, and essentially, you know, bring it to an even playing field, which is where it should be. Everybody can be a philanthropist. You know, Charlie, one of the groups that we've gotten to know is Warren Buffett's team. Him and his sister founded an organization called Letters to Doris, which Doris is Warren Buffett's sister. And they had something very similar where you could write in if you were in immediate need or crisis, you know, in the mail, right? Snail mail. And one of the things that we learned from them was they were trying to use the mail and writing in to make other people philanthropists. But then technology came along, et cetera. So people have tried to do this before, but I think this is the first time you're seeing a large-scale American movement happen organically. I mean, Charlie, over a 30-day period, I had over 400 million impressions on my Twitter account. This is coming from a guy who only, tweeted, very rarely. And all of a sudden, this thing has gone. So the American people want to give. Business people want to give. Wealthy people want to give. And frankly, average Americans and even people who are of lower means, if somebody's suffering more than they are, they also want to give. And that's what the beauty of this movement.
Well, I'll tell you, it's really an incredible thing, Bill, that you've been able to grow and be able to do here. And so I also just want to dive a little bit, further into this. I think our audience, really wants to know about it, which is just how this thing has become viral. And so, Bill, it's been an amazing, ascension in the last couple months. Tell me more about, how you've been able to deal with this notoriety, because you were just a business guy before all this, right? And talk to our audience about what it's like to get famous overnight just trying to help people.
Well, it's been fascinating. And I would tell you that a lot of people have looked at me and said, what the heck is going on? You're that guy giving away money on Twitter. But how I look at it is I'm knocking down walls. I'm knocking down mental prisons that people had in their heads. For example, Charlie, before I came on the scene here, a lot of people didn't want to post videos of their need and put it on camera and say, hey, I'm without teeth. We've pretty much knocked down that mental barrier. And what that has allowed, Charlie, is it's allowed people to be able to videotape themselves with their need, show that they don't have teeth, and be able to appeal to Americans who are willing to give. So, I don't look at it really, frankly, in terms of fame or anything like that. I look at it in terms of how do we go about changing the conversation about giving. And I think we're well on our way to changing it. But obviously, we've got a lot of work left to do. And we say we're taking care of one American at a time. And we'll keep doing so.
Well, I'm just looking at the study, Bill. It shows that Americans gave away $410 billion to charity in 2017, across the $400 billion mark for the first time. And guess what? When the stock market goes up and economic conditions, thanks to President Trump, are really good, people can give away more money. So, Bill, how much money have you given away with this? I mean, you must have been given $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 personally to this. I mean, if you're comfortable disclosing it, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
So I've given several hundred thousand dollars in the form of a Tesla and the form of cars in the form of different goods. I actually bought, believe it or not, I think it was something like 25 air conditioning units for the city of Baltimore, because I saw
wow.
on Twitter that they had run out of air conditioning. So I bought it. So this to me, Charlie, is, and I know your audience is big on the free market, these are the benefits of the free market, right? I had been fortunate to make my money over the last 10 years and become wealthy. A lot of people think I'm wealthy because of my grandfather. A lot of people, may have heard of my grandfather because he was very wealthy. People keep saying, oh, do you have a trust fund or whatever? I'm saying, look, if I have a trust fund, tell me where it is, because I want to find it. If I had a trust fund, I'd probably be giving away more money on Twitter. But my point being is just simply that, over the last 10 years, I've made this money, and in business, I did well. And now I'm able to give it the way that I want to give it away. And, I have to comply with laws and all that kind of stuff. But yes, we've given several hundred thousand dollars in the form of goods and other things.
Well, and it's such a great point, Bill. And so I have two thoughts on that. Number one, I've just been very interested on your Twitter. You have to give all these disclaimers, no purchase necessary. And I laugh because we have all these laws around helping people. So think about it. So you have to give all these disclaimers, even though that you're trying to help people. We have this bureaucracy. And so every time I see your tweet, I understand why you have to do it. So here's the government making it kind of harder, adding more rules, more regulation. I know you have to talk to lawyers and all this stuff, so that you can go make people's lives better. It's a great example of big government getting in the way of someone who actually wants to make the world a better place. So in closing, Bill, I just have two other questions I really want to touch on. Number one, we have a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast, a lot of people that hustle, a lot of people that, want to take risks. You started a business from nothing. You started an HVAC company and you sold it really impressively. And so what advice do you have to young entrepreneurs, people that are saying, hey, I want to have a business? Tell us that.
Yeah. Start small, get it done the right way, and go one day at a time. My grandfather once told me when I was young, he says, a lot of people try to basically take a ladder and they try to swing themselves on top of the roof. But if you just start one step at a time, just one step up, pretty soon you're going to get on the roof. So I would just say, you know, if your audience members have an area of expertise where they're good at, where they want to start a business, again, this isn't advice, but just my own opinion is, you know, do something, do it great, start small, and build it. Build it nice and easy and steady, and over time, it will snowball into something big. That's been my experience, and I think if you chase the money, money follows. It doesn't lead. So that would be my thought.
So what do you say, Bill, when people say, you know, I have all these different options in front of me, and some people say I have to go to college, some people say I have to pursue my dreams, and they deal with all this sort of adversity. When you deal with adversity, what is the best lesson you've taken away? How do you deal with, you know, when things get tough, what's the number one lesson and takeaway that you can give to people?
Just run into the fear. You know, fear is like a wave. And if you dive in it, you pop out the other side. And so I very much subscribe to the idea that you are not your thoughts. And so if you're having a bad day, if you're down, most often it's the way that you think about things. And somebody is hurting more than you. And one of the things we've been doing with Twitter philanthropy is showing in many cases, there's often somebody suffering more than us. So I think having that right mindset is just the way to get started.
Bill, that's such great advice, and that you are the master of your own destiny. And I know you're a believer in the philosophy of conceive, believe, work, achieve. And everyone listening to this podcast, I hope you guys take to heart what Bill is saying, because this is a guy that started from nothing. He's taken very big risks, and now he embodies the American spirit of giving money back, actually being generous, being a philanthropist. And look, Bill and I have, you know, I texted him. I said, Bill, You could lead a movement that gives billions of dollars away, hundreds of billions of dollars away. There's no limit to the generosity of Americans. And that's only possible when you create wealth. If you have nothing to give away, if there's no wealth created, there's nothing to give away. That's a really important thing, because when you have socialism and there's no wealth being created, eventually you run out of other people's money. And what I love is that this is a voluntary movement. It's voluntary of people stepping up, helping other people in need and people that really want, that really deserve that kind of help. And it's transparent. It's in real time and it's instant. And so, Bill, you're doing amazing work. Thanks for coming on
Thank you, Charlie. And thank you for all your help. You know, you've been there.
Of course, you've been there
since the beginning, and been 100%. And, you know, it's so amazing. You know, you really find out who your friends are. And now everybody wants to be a part of this thing, which is great. We're happy to have everybody. But, you know, in certain times you learn a lot, and you are always there. And I just want to say thank you. And this thing is just getting started. So buckle your
seat. It's just getting started. It's awesome. So again, it's teamgiving.com, which is easy to remember URL. You can follow Bill at Pulte on Twitter. Go ahead. What else, Bill? Plug the other ones. I want to make sure our audience knows where to go.
Just at Pulte on Twitter. Join the team. And look, even if you can't give any money, you can at least do a retweet or something like that, because we're taking care of Americans, one American at a time.
And it's outside of government, and it's people helping people through freedom. Bill, you're a great American. Thanks for joining the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thanks, Charlie. Talk to you soon.
If you guys want to support Turning Point USA in any way, or if you want to get involved, it's tpusa.com, and give your liberal relative the gift of the Charlie Kirk Show by taking their iPhone and subscribing for them and giving it back to them. They will be smarter, happier, and more enlightened. Till next time.
Happy holidays from your friends at Podcast One.
Hi, everyone. It's Becca from the Lady Gang. We wanted to say thank you to all our advertisers for their support this year. We couldn't do it without you. Have a very happy holiday season.
Hey, this is Adam Carolla. I want to thank you for listening this year, and have a happy and safe holiday.
Hi, it's Barbara Boxer wishing you a happy new year.
And this is Nicole. Yeah, and we're wishing you a happy holidays.
Hey, everyone. It's Sheena Shea from Shenanigans. Just wishing you all happy holidays and a very happy new year.
Hey guys, it's Nas
and Nadia
from Ladies Like Us. We want to wish our listeners a very happy holiday and say thank you to all our advertisers who support our show.
We could not do it without you. Happy holidays.
Hey, it's Heather and Terry Dubrow.
Hello, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Chuck, I know you love being Santa.
No, I am Santa. All day, every day.
Happy holidays from Adulting Like a Motherfather.
Hey, everyone, it's Caitlin Bristow from Off the Vine Podcast, wishing you a very happy holiday season, and thank you for all of your support this year.
Tis the season of giving!
And we know you're looking for gifts for your family and friends right now.
So check out our amazing sponsors who bring you Showmance every week for free.
Give us your ears.
And they'll give you awesome deals.
And we will give you more of the content you love.
Hey, it's Heidi Pratt. I just want to thank all of our amazing sponsors for making this show possible, and every
everything that they do so we can have this free podcast for you guys every week. So thank you so much to all of our awesome sponsors. We love you, and we really love all your products. So thank you.
Hey, everybody. Steve Austin here, and I want to wish you a very happy holiday season and a happy new year. And that's the bottom line.